Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Plank of the Week. Unfortunately, we're still not in a position to video this particular episode, so we're going to do it as an audio podcast only. And I'm delighted to say, for the first time, joining us is Joe Hemmings, a psychologist to the stars, and indeed me, occasionally. Joe, a very warm welcome to Plank of the Week.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Very much looking forward to your selections. And Russell Quirk, who I have to say is a bit of a veteran of Plank of the Week, has been on it quite a few times in various different guises. Russell, housing expert, property man, a man of many parts, really. Welcome back, Russell.
Thank you, Mike. Can't believe you keep having me back.
Well, you haven't done anything yet to dissuade me from having you back. Now, we've explained to Jo how this all works, even though she does listen to it on a regular basis. And so we're going to try and basically get three nominations for Plank of the Week out of Jo. I've got a terrible feeling, Jo, that you might be a bit of a token lefty on this show.
Well, I would say I was probably quite middle ground, maybe veering to the left. But I think for your show purposes, I am really quite seriously far left wing.
Right. Yep. Does that mean you're going to nominate the senior advisor to the government for Plank of the Week?
Kind of.
Go on then.
Any of the government, really. I only had a choice of three. I mean, unfortunately, I could have probably come up with a lot more. But
yes. Well, give us your first nomination then. Go on.
Okay, my first nomination, of course, which has to be, for whatever reason, it has to be Dominic Cummings.
Well, I mean, somebody has to do it, I suppose. I mean, it wouldn't be me, and I suspect it wouldn't be Russell, so it wouldn't be right if we didn't have him in the list, because the country appears to be quite split about the whole thing.
Yes, indeed. Now, he's got to be there, and even if you support him and what he did and why he did it, I still think he's got to be in there at Plank of the Week just because of the whole speech thing yesterday, this 11-year-old's essay, you know, it's late, I'm sorry the captain's sick on it, I'm just going to speak him, you know, single monosyllabic sentences for 45 minutes to excuse myself from doing this thing, but I'm not going to say the hardest words in the world, which are, I'm sorry, at the end of it. So he could have been forgiven, I think, but he didn't ask for forgiveness, so I don't forgive him.
Russell, what do you make of it, Russell?
Well, I have to be honest, I have generally supported Cummings, given his, if you like, excuse for driving to Durham. The issue I did have with him yesterday was, A, doing the press conference in the first place. I'm not sure that was very wise and obviously unprecedented. And I think it raised probably a few more questions than it answered, particularly around driving to the hospital, presumably still with COVID symptoms, and indeed a jolly up on his wife's birthday to Barnard Castle and stopping in the woods on the way back, which I think actually was probably the most significant blow. But generally, I think we just need to move on, don't we?
Well, I think so. And I think the problem for Dominic Cummings is the media, and we'll probably get to most of this as we go through this particular podcast, because in the end, for me, Joe, we've got this obsession with asking people to say sorry, it seems, in this world now. And it's almost as though, you know, if Hitler turned up, they'd say, well, as long as you say sorry for what you did, you know, we'll understand and you can carry on.
There are exceptions to this I'm sorry rule, of course. I think the problem is you've got a very, very angry country. We need to be angry about something. There's this massive amount of uncertainty. Nobody's going to get it right, whoever was in power. There's loads of sort of mixed information coming through. And I think, yeah, we needed a target, and he was there as a target. And he looked extremely uncomfortable, I have to say, through that weird sort of open-air theatre type scenario. It was a bit like watching Shakespeare in the park, and yeah. It wasn't.
Well, somebody said to me, it was a bit like when he sat down, they thought it was going to be like the start of the old Monty Python show, you know, and he was going to say, and now for something completely different.
Well, it was really bizarre. He looked like he'd been hauled up to the head. And each of the press were kind of the headmasters telling him off, and he got more and more kind of, he was sort of collapsing into himself. I think he found it really uncomfortable. But I do think, yeah, you know, it's the moving on bit. He's decided we're going to move on, and clearly Boris Johnson's decided we're going to move on. But the trouble is, a lot of the country are not ready to move on. So if he'd given us a few little nibbles that we could say, OK, we'll now move on, that would have helped. But we were just in this impasse, but we don't have any control over it, so we'll just stay angry.
But this is a problem, isn't it? It's not really ideal. I mean, you're a psychologist. You understand the ins and outs of the science of all of this. But, Russell, I mean, does anybody honestly believe if he said sorry or that he regretted it, that everybody would go, oh, that's fine, then we'll just move on? I don't think that would happen.
Well, no, of course not, because then the front pages for the next 4 or 5 days would be, A, that story continuing, but also I suspect then, as I'll come to in a minute perhaps, the mainstream media will have smelt blood and then will continue to incessantly bash the whole Cummings drum on the basis of trying to get further concessions and apologies from the man.
Yeah, well, this brings us to your first nomination, I presume, Russell.
It does very nicely. Yes, I think far, far worse than Cummings himself is the way that the mainstream media itself has behaved over the last week or 8 or 9 days, whatever it is. And present company accepted. Obviously, I listened to your show, Mike, and you've been a bastion of balance here, actually.
As ever.
Sensibility. But the mainstream media, and by that what I mean is the likes of, you know, Sky, BBC, ITV, Robert Peston, Beth Rigby, Gary Gibbon and Piers Morgan in particular, I actually sense, apart from their obsession here, well, actually, we haven't heard any other news, have we, for the last 8 or 9 days? There's all sorts of stuff been going on around Brexit and the US. The fact that, you know, I think there was a tiny little piece in The Times on Sunday, which then wasn't explored any further this week insofar as the delay in terms of lockdown potentially causing 1.3 million extra infections and so on. Whether you agree with that or not, I think the fact that we've been obsessed with one man's 260-mile trip to Durham and then back has meant that the whole mainstream media has been distracted. But the other issue I've got is the hypocrisy of the mainstream media. Did you see the photographers and the journalists outside his house herding together, shoulder to shoulder, you know, no masks, no social distancing? And literally one breath, you've got the likes of Adam Bolton on Sky saying how disgusting and terrible it is that Dominic Cummings has done what he's done, and then literally goes straight to the Sky journalists on the scene and their cameramen, who are in a kind of a herd, you know, up front and up close and personal to each other, in a blatant display of absolute hypocrisy. And so I think the mainstream media, I don't think they've done themselves any favours here. And I think the majority of the public would probably agree with me.
I think, Joe, that's the problem, isn't it? I mean, I'm obviously a journalist of long standing, and it pains me, actually, to be so critical of the way the media has behaved. But the media really has been quite outrageous. I mean, The Mirror and The Guardian, to pick on just two of the papers that that ran this story, have still not corrected the fact that on the second trip that they claim he made, he has completely outright denied it. He said that basically he was in London. You can check his mobile phone and do his, you know, his sat-nav, and it will prove that he wasn't there. And yet they haven't bothered to correct that. They've allowed that out there to be something that people still think happened.
I agree. And from a psychological perspective, I don't like this sort of witch hunt. I don't like the fact they're all piling in on an individual. I sort of feel we need it. We need that kind of almost misdirection, if you like, from everything else, because it's something we can get hold of and it's palpable. And as you say, it may be incorrect in parts, but it is palpable. It's something they can run with. And there isn't very much other than the same old kind of stats or the sort of figures we see or the charts that we see or what's going on in other countries for them to run with. So actually to see the press, yeah, it is quite shocking. However, to see the Daily Mail, I mean, the bastion of middle-class Tory voting Britain, turn against the Tories, or to turn against Boris, is extraordinary. So, yeah, I kind of agree. There definitely are planks, but I'm sort of also fascinated by the nuances of what's going on with traditional media. You expect The Guardian and The Mirror to kind of run with this stuff, but The Daily Mail?
Yeah, but The Daily Mail is now a very different beast since Paul Dacre was given his marching orders and they put Geordie Gregg in charge, who of course is the new editor, who of course is a Remainer, very close to the Lord who runs the place, and also is an old Etonian, would you believe?
Well, it doesn't. This doesn't surprise me. But you know, it's the first time I've seen it sort of so obvious. I mean, pretty much they'll defend under any circumstances. You know, newspapers have always done this, as far as I know. They kind of pretty much stick with their party, and that's, they will always put a spin on it, which is favourable. And it's the first time I've seen the mainstream media do this. However, I do think it is out of a desperation to pin everything on somebody, because otherwise there's just no explanation for what's going on. And he happened to be that scapegoat that everybody at the same time decided, you know, we're going to make him culpable for all we're feeling for the past 3 months.
I'd go a bit further than that. I honestly think this is a leftover from Brexit, don't you? The fact that Cummings is seen to be the Brexit victor, as is Johnson, and lots of members of the mainstream media that were very, very blatant in their Remain stance individually on their Twitter accounts, the likes of Pest and Rigby and Lewis Goodall and so on, I think they saw this as an opportunity to get Cummings.
There's no question, because he has treated the media with absolute scant regard, doesn't think they're worth the paper they're written on, as it were. But I mean, I actually put a tweet out on Saturday night, slightly mischievously, unusually for me, suggesting that Dominic Cummings has produced his own dead cat, because basically he's got everybody looking at him and nobody's looking at the government. Nobody's blaming Boris for anything. They're all so desperate to try and take him down that he's managed to distract everybody from what's actually happening, Joe.
Well, what I did find fascinating at the briefing last night was, of course, all the journalists have their questions prepared about Cummings, every single one. And yet, you know, Boris throws a curveball into this by opening up car showrooms on the 1st of June and, you know, virtually every other store from the 15th of June. And at this point, I thought, why are you not changing your questions? You know, it's live. Why can't you suddenly say, OK, I'm going to tear up the Cummings questions, so we're clearly not going to get anywhere with them. We tried it already just an hour ago with the man himself. Why they didn't just ask something else? Yeah. I felt it made them look really weak. It was clearly a device used by Johnson to disarm them, and it worked incredibly successfully. And I found that extraordinary. It all looked so stupid.
Well, they do.
Yesterday's news an hour later.
I know, and that's exactly, I think, what they wanted to do. My first nominee is obviously from the same sort of stable, if you like, as your first ones each. I'm going for an organisation called Led by Donkeys. Now, I didn't know about this lot, unfortunately, until it was too late. These are the people who drove a lorry into Dominic Cummings Street, which had a massive television screen on it, started playing interviews with people who were talking about how much they hated the government because they'd lost loved ones. I mean, really disgusting stuff. Outside a house where his four-year-old lives with his mother and with Dominic Cummings. They claimed later that they did it because they knew the kid wasn't there. But I mean, even so, this kind of piling on people, this kind of intimidatory behaviour. They've got a big billboard which is out on outside of Westminster Bridge, which says, "Stay alert. Government incompetence costs lives." And I don't know who is paying for it all. I don't know who's bankrolling them, but they've got 367,000 followers on Twitter. And these are the kind of sort of lefties that I really, really detest, because they're sort of faceless. They'll turn up to demonstrate about anything as long as it's nothing that they actually, you know, can put their hands on their hearts and say that they support. And I just think something terrible has happened to this country if these kind of organisations are allowed to do whatever they like. Joe?
Well, look, you know, I'm a slightly left-wing leaning. However, I have never supported anything like Momentum. I've never supported any of the kind of raving left that, as you say, just go out there because they can, and with total disregard for people's feelings. In fact, you know, that's TV screen. You know, if we agree or not agree, but if we say that Dominic Cummings is thoughtless in what he did in terms of other people's feelings, who made all these sacrifices, they are equally thoughtless in dragging a big TV screen in front of his home, you know, to do that sort of thing. So when you don't see, when you don't have a clue of emotional intelligence of how your behaviour is kind of emulating the very behaviour that you're protesting about, then I think you've lost the plot.
Yeah, I think so. Russell, why don't you give us your second nomination?
Yes, my next nomination is, again, related to one and two, I guess, is the wonderful Alistair Campbell.
Oh, yes.
Now, Alistair, as we know, was the Director of Communications for Tony Blair up until whenever that was, 2008, 2009, and was really the architect of spin and subterfuge and glossing the media and backslapping and so on.
And he didn't do it with a very kind heart either.
No, and so the reason that, and it shouldn't be a surprise really, the reason that he's on my nomination list is simply the bare-faced hypocrisy of the man over the last 4 or 5 days. He's been wheeled onto the BBC and Sky, and of course very prolific on Twitter and other social media channels, where with a straight face, without any irony whatsoever, has launched into quite severe attacks on Dominic Cummings and Boris Johnson, insofar as them being liars, them being deceitful, them being masters of spin. I mean, crikey, steady on a sec.
Yeah.
And how the government and Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings in particular have, in his words, blood on their hands insofar as the people that have died from COVID. Now, I have to say, and hopefully you'll keep this bit in, if anybody in the last 20 years in government has blood on their hands, it's the likes of Alistair Campbell and Tony Blair. So the gall and the barefaced hypocrisy of a man that can tweet incessantly every few minutes about what liars and what deceit has been displayed by the likes of Cummings and Johnson. I mean, the man honestly wants to take a good look at himself in the mirror. We don't have that short memories that we don't remember what he was like as the architect of liars and deception himself.
He does seem impervious to that kind of criticism, doesn't he? And he's also the kind of go-to expert for everybody as soon as anything happens. And Joe, I was watching the briefing that Dominic Cummings gave yesterday, and right after it, Adam Bolton from Sky, straight to their first guest, Alistair Campbell, who completely rubbished it.
Yes, Alistair Campbell is more than a go-to person. He bobs up everywhere. I mean, he's 24/7, he never sleeps. Look, you know, he's like the original sort of Teflon guy. He has very conveniently chosen to forget any criticism that could be railed at him back in the day. And he's come back sort of like a sub-Piers Morgan, but without a show to sort of hang it on. So it's every opportunity he can have. I mean, I quite like Alistair Campbell for his passion, I think there's a good heart in there somewhere, but it's almost excessive. It's constant. And, you know, choose your battles wisely would be my view, rather than piling into everything.
But by his own admission, he is a very obsessive character, you know.
He was an alcoholic.
He was a workaholic. He was all of those things that drive people sort of crazy after a while. And I mean, I don't know if there's a name for somebody who self-deludes themselves to such an extent that they kind of have rewritten their own history. But it seems to me to be something that's what he does.
We should coin the phrase, shouldn't we? We should call it Campbellism. and the other thing that he's banging on about at the moment, today in particular on Sky News, was how he terms the political elite. And again, if anyone was at the top elitist table of government, it was him.
Right, exactly right. Joe, why don't you give us your second one?
Okay, so my second one, I'm afraid, is Grant Shapps.
Ah.
Now, really, because he's just the most tragic fall guy for everything in the past few days. I mean, you know, he's the transport secretary. So when he came on, he announced 419 network rail projects, 1,000 upgrades to roads during the Maybank holiday, et cetera, et cetera. I thought, well, we're desperate to kind of hear something, I believe, at the time about Dominic Cummings.
Yeah.
And he's talking about roads, and there was an A, I don't know, let's call it the A66.
I think it was the A66, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? It was the A66. Yeah. It's a bit like the devil 666, but anyway. I mean, like, really, it's just a very strange thing to sort of enter with. So anyway, he came in, he's got very bad hair at the moment. I know a lot of guys are suffering with a lack
Join
of
the
haircut,
club.
But Grant Shapps' hair looks like he's stuck his fingers into a socket, so it's all springy and fluffy. So I keep obsessing about that. And then he got dragged onto everything to try and explain the Dominic Cummings situation. And clearly, he was unable to. He probably wasn't the right man to say it. He looked like he wasn't the right man. He pulled the short straw. And for that reason, I think he's a bit of a fan.
Well, he's a very unpopular guy, Grant Shapps. I mean, even I think his own party are not that keen on him. But, I mean, this is a guy who I used to know someone who knew him when he was younger. where apparently he was the sort of the spitting image of Tory boy, you know, that Harry Enfield character that used to drive around in a sort of sports car with the open top and just sort of, you know, laugh at the peasants and literally throw money out of it. You know, he was that kind of a character. And he is a rather sort of smug individual. But the idea, Russell, that he was disappointed nobody wanted to ask him about the A66 suggests that he might be in the wrong job.
Yeah, there's a shock. Yeah, you can imagine the journalists kind of scratching their heads as to, well, shall I ask about Dominic Cummings or shall I ask about a new road that may or may not be built? So I have to disagree quite considerably, really, on Shapps. I actually think he's quite an accomplished minister. Now, obviously, he's been around a while. He's been kind of in and out of the cabinet. But I think that he was definitely given a hospital pass, wasn't he, at the weekend?
Oh,
he was obviously on duty and had to kind of defend someone. Apparently, he hadn't even spoken to about this particular incident in the form of Dominic Cummings. So, but I actually think Shapps does pretty well compared to most ministers when he's on the stump.
Well, this is the thing about Dominic Cummings and why clearly there are so many people in the Tory party who don't like him and want to get him out, because that leads me to my second contender as well. Because the problem for Cummings is that he's got a lot of enemies, and anyone who has a lot of enemies, whenever things like this happen, you know, they just pile in. I mean, it's a bit like when I used to work in newspapers, you know, if you had a very aggressive way about you, and if you'd messed a few people around, and if you'd done something to somebody that upset them, as soon as you're in a vulnerable position, they just come and start killing you, you know, and that's what's happening to Cummings now. But my second nomination is a bloke that until this moment today I'd never heard of. He's a guy called Douglas Ross, who's apparently the junior minister for Scotland in the government, and he decided uproariously to resign his position, having only been in it for 4.5 months. He decided it was a great idea to show some kind of willingness, you know, to bring Cummings down. Gleefully, of course, it was reported that his resignation would be followed by several others, which didn't happen. And he's a bloke who has always been a Remainer and would always be anti-Cummings anyway. And I just think that, you know, to get yourself into a government is a great achievement. But to put yourself out of it after 4.5 months over something which doesn't really matter as far as he's concerned, is just mad to me, Joe.
Well, I'm wondering if he was looking out, you know, for a get-out-of-jail-free card, you know, A, or B, was hoping that this would create huge ripples in the Tory government, and he would be the person who made that initial statement. And of course, it's just disappeared under the radar. As you say, I've never heard of him until today. I probably won't hear of him again after tomorrow. he's been and come and gone, and whatever statement he was trying to make with his resignation kind of hasn't really worked.
Right. The thing that I find quite amusing about him as well, and I don't know why I find this comical, but his other job is he's a football referee, Russell, which always, you know, sort of conjures up images of people shouting at him from the terraces, you know, get your eyes fixed or get your Specsavers on or something like that, you know, because at the end of the day, everybody hates the referee.
My goodness, you couldn't get, apart from estate agency, and I'll put my hands up to that, you couldn't get two more undesirable professions in one. Maybe he thinks that two negatives makes a positive somehow. And yeah, I think, look, isn't it obvious that with 4 years to go until an election, what's the point in resigning? I mean, Bojo's not going anywhere, Cummings isn't going anywhere, and there's no pressure on them to go anywhere. So a resignation, I suspect he's probably got a mailbag full of constituency angst and objection to Cummings, and thinks, well, actually, if I'm to survive re-election in the future, I better fall on my sword and do the right thing. So it's probably got less to do about principle and more about re-election, I suspect.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, I was talking to somebody on the show today about these emails that all these MPs are claiming they've got, and I'm never sure when any MP says they've got thousands of emails whether, one, they're telling the truth, or two, they haven't all come from the same office, you know. But apparently the MPs are saying, oh, but these are emails from people who don't normally email us. And I'm like, oh, what, so there might be bots then? You know, oh no, we have to check every email's genuine. I mean, Joe, I think there's a lot of things that get said. For example, I was having a go at Sky earlier today as well, because yesterday they sent about three different reporters up to Barnard Castle after complaining that one man had gone there with his wife and child. And they said, oh, yeah, we haven't found anybody yet that's supportive of Dominic Cummings, and everyone we've spoken to says that they think he should resign. But they didn't have any video footage of anybody saying anything.
No, I mean, that's sort of very odd journalism, isn't it? I mean, that is kind of just endorsing what you already want to say without backing it up, and just assuming that we won't notice that actually there isn't anybody backing that up. So, in that way, it's all been a bit unsavoury, and it is unsavoury. And for the reason I'd like it to go away is the unsavouriness. I actually kind of don't agree with what he did. I'd like him to have resigned, lefty me, or be fired. However, he didn't. And I do think there is a point at which this kind of pursuit becomes purposeless now. And it just isn't very good journalism, is it?
No, it's really not. And it doesn't, it just makes you feel slightly grubby. It makes you feel like really there should be better things being done with their time. And, you know, OK, you can say that he's brought it all on himself, but, you know, by a large extent, the media have created a media bubble around themselves and around him. And they don't show any signs of wanting to let it go, but they really need to, I think. What's your third one, Joe?
Absolutely agree.
OK, so my third one, I've got to get this right. So it's Sadiq Khan. Now, under most circumstances.
Very popular, very popular choice. That I think he won it last week.
Of him sometimes, but he seems to misfire a lot in what he says. I kind of support him through his views on transport and protecting us on public transport. Then he started saying, though, you know, the kind of congestion charge is coming back, which I disagree with. And now he's saying that the kind of police, the bobby on the beat, if you like, is not counted as a key worker and they are not going to be exempted from the congestion charge. And I find it, like, what is he doing? Like, is he just, you know, sleeping his way through just random stuff and then throwing it to see if it sticks? Because it's offensive. Anybody, whatever side of the political fence you're on, would I think, deem this to be absolute rubbish that you wouldn't say that police going to work are not key workers. Why on earth would they not be exempt from the congestion charge? I can't imagine what this guy is thinking. And even, you know, the Police Federation are saying that is a huge slap in the face. This is a really bad thing at a time like this. So I'm afraid he's in my plank list.
Yeah, well, he makes this list quite a lot, actually. He was plank of the month in February. That's how far back it goes, because he's just really doing so well. I can't imagine the ridiculousness of a man who initially, Russell, last week, I think it was, when he brought the congestion charge back, basically was blaming the government for it. Then finally goes on Good Morning Britain. He'll never come on my show. He loves to go on LBC, but he never comes on. We've asked him probably about 15 times to come on my show. Never does. And he then had the gall to actually admit to Piers Morgan that it was his decision, that it was not the government's decision to put the congestion charge up. So I'm sorry, that's not spin. That's a lie, isn't it?
He's a terrible mayor, and as far as I'm concerned, he could win this every week. I've nominated him in the past on your show, actually, Plank of the Week.
Yes.
He's good at one thing and one thing only, and that is abdicating responsibility. He does it on housing quite a lot. You know, his housing record over the last 4 years, where he said he was going to build, I think, 135,000 social housing units, is built about 23,000. But of course, it's somebody else's fault. Even though he's got £4 billion sitting in the bank given to him by government 2 years ago, it's somebody else's fault every single time. So, yes, Joe, slightly surprised, but a welcome nomination.
Indeed. And time for your third one, Russell.
Right, so my third one, you might not recognise his name immediately. The name is James Argent. But okay, if I were to refer to him as Arge, any fan of the... It's actually the show that is shot in my hometown of Brentwood, actually, Towie. Unfortunately, it's made a caricature of the entire neighbourhood. But never mind, moving on from that.
It wasn't just Terry that did that. I've got some news for you, I'm afraid. It wasn't.
It might just be me.
Yeah.
But Argy's, look, the very, very popular, bubbly, chubby character, I have to say, that happens to currently be going out with Gemma Collins, apparently. But The Sun have made a big, big deal about a so-called exclusive that they've run with over the last 24 hours about his cocaine addiction. And the whole thing, which obviously is orchestrated as a PR stunt to try and kind of grab some opportunistic popularity, is a massive sympathy fest. And I have to say, as someone that's never done such things, but that has in their family got all sorts of addicts. You know, my mum was an alcoholic, my grandmother was an alcoholic, and so on. I have zero sympathy for someone that admits to having a cocaine addiction for 7 years and basically says how sorry everybody should feel for him. And The Sun have kind of fallen for it hook, line and sinker. And I'm afraid, look, self-inflicted, by my book, not an illness. He's obviously dabbled in it because it was a party thing to do back in the day, and now he's reaping the consequences, but I have zero sympathy.
But this is the thing, isn't it, Joe? I mean, you'll have seen lots of examples of this, where the sort of celebrity gets into a bit of trouble. The celebrity then makes some kind of confession publicly and then hopes that the forgiving public will continue to think that they're great. I mean, he wouldn't be the first guy that's done it.
He wouldn't, but interestingly, I mean, this is running concurrently with another story about James Argent, which is that he's lost, I don't know, a couple of stone in weight, can't remember exactly what it is, and he intends to lose another 3 stone in weight. So he's on this kind of weight loss mission. You kind of think, well, if at the same time he's confessing to taking huge amounts of cocaine, which is an appetite suppressant in itself, but kind of slightly confused why he's also selling himself on this stupendous weight loss plan that he's putting on, because one would be tempted to confuse the two stories as having been related in some way.
But I suppose, when I was working in the tabloid business, there used to be a kind of timeline of what happened to someone, you know, get discovered, make a load of money, start taking loads of drugs, start falling off the other side of the mountain and suddenly come back with some kind of confession to get you back up to the top of the mountain and get another recording contract or another movie or something like that. There's a sort of there's a pattern to all of it.
Dare I venture that he's just changed PR firms? I suspect that's what this is all about.
They've overlapped.
There's always possible. Now-
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm hoping you're going to like my final nomination, because this, I think, is my best one. And it's J.K. Rowling, because I don't know whether over the course of all the madness of the weekend you spotted that after one of the briefings, I think it might have been after Boris first appeared, the UK Civil Service Twitter account tweeted out a tweet which was very swiftly deleted, basically, which said something like, arrogant and offensive, can you imagine having to work with these truth twisters, right? And it was put out on this official UK Civil Service account. J.K. Rowling was so excited by it that she said, basically, she tweeted out that if anybody could identify who it was that had sent the tweet out, she would pay their salary for a year. Now, I thought to myself, you know, so here's a woman who's so wealthy that she could literally buy Britain, probably, if she wanted to, offering to bribe a civil servant, an officer of the crown, somebody who works for the government, basically, in this country, and encourage them to continue to behave in a way which is, quite frankly, seditious. Joe?
Well, you know, if this was a tweet put out by somebody who wasn't J.K. Rowling, it was just a random person on Twitter going, whoa, whoa, I love that, you know, I'll give him my year's salary, you know, absolutely. That would be okay, but it's J.K. Rowling. And the problem is that some people just, you know, they have this huge amount of influence. You know, my kids grew up on J.K. Rowling. Yeah. I'm so disappointed in her now. Because it was like this massive part of their sort of growing up and the books and, you know, everything else. And she just seems to throw these things out without consideration that she has this huge sort of influence. It's just kind of insulting and it's childlike. Mm. And I 100% am with you on J.K. Rowling.
We've finally found some common ground. I'm very glad to
hear
it.
We have.
This is what happens when you come on the plakes with me. This is how it goes. Russell, what do you reckon?
Well, yeah, you'd imagine that J.K. Rowling would want the civil service to be unbiased and to be impartial, wouldn't
yeah.
he? And surely, if someone was to tweet something that was pro-government from a civil service account, she'd be all over it. Her and Hugh Grant would be having babies,
oh, yeah.
not together, I might add, but they would be apoplectic. So it's, again, massive hypocrisy that someone should be effectively encouraging individuals within the civil service that are bound by a code of impartiality to be the opposite of that. I think it's absolutely astonishing.
Absolutely right. So now here's the point where we've now got our 9 nominations, Joe. So I'm going to ask you to pick your favourite one of my 3 to reduce it down to 1 from me. So my 3 are J.K. Rowling, Douglas Ross, the junior minister for Scotland, and led by donkeys. Which one of those should we put into the final 3?
Well, from my perspective, I'm going to put J.K. Rowling in because she's seems like she could be part of Led by Donkeys, really. I mean, she might be the perpetrator of Led by Donkeys. She's had the same sort of attitude. I'd like to... And Douglas Ross, I just don't feel... I think he's he's gone and come. Comings and goings, you know, sorry. I've always been a bit peed off with J.K. Rowling and her attitude to life, so I'm going to go for her.
Okay. And so, Russell, why don't you choose which one of Joe's you'd like to put through? That comes from Dominic Cummings, Sadiq Khan and Grant Shapps.
Well, this is tricky because I can't put Cummings in, I'm afraid, because I don't think he's worthy of being a plank. Grant Shapps, I feel equally passionately about, actually, in terms of my defence of him. And without wishing to be typecast, Mike, therefore it leads me by a process of elimination to Sadiq Khan.
So Sadiq Khan...
Hold on.
This is now starting to look like a stitch-up, Joe. I hope you don't think it is.
Totally. I can't find a better expression than that.
Well, I mean...
Mike and I did not collaborate earlier.
We really didn't. We really didn't. I didn't even think that could happen, but there we are. All right, so Joe...
Look at it.
So I should now choose yours, Russell, right? What were your three again?
My three were the mainstream media,
yeah,
Alistair Campbell and Arge.
I think it's going to be the mainstream media, you know. I think I'm going to go for that because that will then give us the three finalists of the mainstream media, Sadiq Khan and J.K. Rowling. And now we have to do the very simple thing, Joe, of agreeing by majority rule which one of the... All of them are in the top 10, so all three of these are in the top three, basically. But which one do you think should win?
Oh, this is a very difficult question. I've lost Dominic Cummings. You have to appreciate that the only person...
Well, do you know what I think I'm going to do?
It's kind of gone.
Well, what I'm going to do, because I compile the top 10 list, beyond the top three, I can assure you that we can put Cummings in as number four if you want.
Okay, well, there is a little bit of peace giving there. Okay, I'll accept that. So, actually, I am going to go for the mainstream media.
Okay, mainstream media. What do you think, Russell?
Well, it has to be. Well, it was my nomination too, but look, it absolutely has to be. I think they're a worthy winner.
I think that's a brilliant choice. So we'll go with mainstream media, two and three. Obviously, Sadiq Khan, J.K. Rowling, Dominic Cummings coming in at number four. I think it's a marvellous plank of the week, this. Plank of the week, mainstream media. Thank you, guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.